The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 9th chapter, 23rd verse, given by His Divine Grace Satsvarupa Das Goswami on September 13, 1982, in
Gitanagari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Translation. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me. Let me say that this me, we're not studying this section. This is Lord Krishna speaking to Lord Brahma after Lord Brahma performed his penances, and then Lord Krishna, Supreme Personality of God, had appeared before him, very pleased with the penances performed by Brahma. Lord Krishna is speaking. O sinless Brahma, you may know from me that it was I who first ordered you to undergo penance when you were perplexed in your duty. Such penance is my heart and soul, and therefore penance and I are non-different. Purport. The penance by which one can see the personality of Godhead face to face is to be understood as devotional service to the Lord and nothing else, because only by discharging devotional service in transcendental love can one approach the Lord. Such penance is the internal potency of the Lord and is non-different from Him. Such acts of internal potency are exhibited by non-attachment for material enjoyment. The living entities are encaged in the conditions of material bondage because of their propensity for overlordship. But by engagement in the devotional service of the Lord, one becomes detached from this enjoying spirit. The devotees automatically become detached from worldly enjoyment, and this detachment is the result of perfect knowledge. Therefore, the penance of devotional service induces knowledge and detachment, and that is the manifestation of the transcendental potency. One cannot enjoy material illusory prosperity if he desires to return home back to Godhead. One who has no information of the transcendental bliss in the association of the Lord foolishly desires to enjoy this temporary material happiness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that if someone sincerely wants to see the Lord and at the same time wants to enjoy this material world, he is considered to be a fool only. One who wants to remain here in the material world for material enjoyment has no business entering into the eternal kingdom of God. The Lord favors such a foolish devotee by snatching all that he may possess in the material world. If such a foolish devotee of the Lord tries to recoup his position, then the merciful Lord again snatches away all that he may have possessed. By such repeated failures in material prosperity, he becomes very unpopular with his family members and friends. In the material world, the family members and friends honor persons who are very successful in accumulating wealth by any means. The foolish devotee of the Lord is thus put into forcible penance by the grace of the Lord, and at the end the devotee becomes perfectly happy, being engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, penance and devotional service of the Lord, either by voluntary submission or by being forced by the Lord, is necessary for attaining perfection, and thus such penance is the internal potency of the Lord. One cannot, however, be engaged in the penance of devotional service without being free from all sins. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, only a person who is completely free from all reactions of sins can engage himself in the worship of the Lord. Brahmaji was sinless, and therefore he faithfully discharged the advice of the Lord, tapa, tapa. And the Lord, being satisfied with him, awarded him the desired result. Therefore, only love and penance combined can please the Lord, and thus one is able to attain his complete mercy. He directs the sinless, and the sinless devotee attains the highest perfection of life. The next verse, with a short purport, really follows this, so I'd like to read it also. Lord Krishna is speaking, I create this cosmos by such penance. I maintain it by the same energy, and I withdraw it all by the same energy. Therefore, the potential power is penance only. Purport, in executing penance, one must be determined to return home back to Godhead and must decide to undergo all types of tribulations for that end. Even for material prosperity, name and fame, one has to undergo severe types of penance. Otherwise, no one can become an important figure in this material world. Why, then, are there severe types of penance for the perfection of devotional service? An easygoing life and attainment of perfection in transcendental realization cannot go together. The Lord is more clever than any living entity. Therefore, He wants to see how painstaking the devotee is in devotional service. The order is received from the Lord, either directly or through the bona fide spiritual master, and to execute that order, however painstaking, is the severe type of penance. One who follows the principle rigidly is sure to achieve success in attaining the Lord's mercy. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Budhulai Srimai Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirbhishesha Sanyavani Pastitani Satani. We sometimes say that Krishna consciousness is beyond penance, because penance is performed by different kinds of yogis and transcendentalists. And as Prabhupada says, it's even performed by the materialist. No one becomes an important figure in the world unless he works. The student has to burn the midnight oil, has to study. And the businessman, he has to work all the time and think how to raise money. Even an entertainer, he has to practice, rehearse. And the politician is working like anything. That's their pleasure, because they want to attain some goal. The idea is to attain greater happiness. As among the transcendentalists, the yogis are sometimes performing penances, but they don't have Krishna as their goal, and the karmis don't have Krishna as their goal. So we can't even properly call that tapasya. Tapasya means to take voluntary pains or effort to achieve devotional service to Krishna, to please Krishna. That's love. You want to please someone, you make something nice for them, you cook for them. You don't just do it carelessly, that you're basically lethargic or lazy in some way. But because you want to please this person, you take some pain and make something nice. So in pleasing Krishna, taking that pain serve Him is called tapasya. And it takes the form for the conditioned soul of restricting himself from the material pleasures. But that is necessary for his own happiness, this kind of restriction. Because unless we are free of these material desires, then at the time of death, just in terms of self-interest, we have to come back again and suffer. Aside from love of God, which is the ultimate goal, we don't even attain another human body. We will be subject to so many pains unless we practice tapasya. We may be transmigrate, reincarnate into the lower form of life. Unless we restrict ourselves from illicit, illegal activities. So devotional service is beyond penance in the sense that it's not any rigorous austerity undertaken except for pleasing Krishna. And also, in this age, the different rigorous penances are not even necessary. We don't ask people to refrain from sex life, but regulate it. We don't ask people, as some of the yogis do or did, not to eat even, but you eat very nicely, but eat Krishna prasadam. We don't say that you have to live in a cave or something like that, or pull out your hairs, but you engage your senses in the service of Krishna. So in that sense also, it is beyond penance. It is simply love of God, serving Krishna, with Krishna as the goal. But there is renunciation, vairagya vidya, nija bhakti yoga. And that's been very strongly stated here by Lord Krishna himself. He's telling Brahma that I was the one who ordered you to undergo penance, just so that you would become purified and get knowledge. So we are doing our service like that. We are working right here in Gita Nagari, performing our own penance, and you've just all done so much service always, and just now such extra service, either going out or covering for those who go out. That is tapasya, and that is the wealth of the Brahmins. To go through some, as Prabhupada says here, some tribulation for Krishna. And to the degree that you're willing to do it, knowing that it's for Krishna, then you succeed. So we have to have faith that Krishna is giving me this instruction through the spiritual master. Otherwise, why should you do it? So the agnostic, he doesn't accept Krishna's order, that it's too much. Krishna's asking too much when he says, Sarvadharma Parityajana Mami Kam Shravanam. It is why this surrender to Krishna? So we have faith in Krishna's order, and then we try to serve him to the best of our ability. And Krishna, as we approach him, Krishna is satisfied. So in this very practical way, we work out the field of activities. Just like Krishna, he asked the Brahmins of Vrindavan, don't be concerned with the demigods in heaven and your religious rituals to him in the form of yajna. In the Vedic system, there's so many different yajnas they perform, and there are mantras and there are offerings to make. He said, just don't be concerned with that. You just take all the religious paraphernalia and the wealth that you were going to use in demigod yajna and use it just to worship Govardhan Hill, because you are concerned not with other cities or other places or other planets or even other lives, but you are Brahmins here in Govardhan. Protect your cows, worship this land. So we're performing our tapasya in terms of Gita Nagari. It's very nice. And Radha Damodar are forcing us, as this Sankirtan institution began with the force, because we have to serve their lordships and maintain this community. Mm-hmm. So this is a transcendental desire of Krishna. Yesterday, one of the devotees was asking me how to understand that if, as Krishna says, if you want to engage my service, that will be your credit. You will be known as a nice devotee, and he's saying, Arjuna, you'll be known as a great hero of Kurukshetra. But then at the other hand, Krishna says, if you don't do it, it will be done anyway, without you. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya's movement is predicted, it will be successful. So you can perform or not. That is for your benefit. So the question was asked, well, but if actually, ultimately, we're not needed, then what is the impetus, and why are we being told that we are needed? My answer was that statement is Krishna's viewpoint. Of course, we share Krishna's viewpoint, but he is God. We can't see everything like him exactly. What is the plan of God? We accept the plan of God without always seeing the whole entire pattern. We assure that whatever role we have to play in the pattern is good, because Krishna is absolute. But we don't know what the whole pattern is. So from our point of view, from our understanding, it is very necessary that we each perform our part in this Krishna consciousness movement and in our particular Gita Nagari. Even though we have faith that if certain devotee didn't work, even if a responsible man in charge of the deity, if he didn't come, the deity worship would go on. If the cowman didn't take care of the cows would go on. But we also know from practical experience that there would be setback, there would be loss, there would be suffering, people involved. So that in itself we don't want to experience. Even though in the long run, philosophically, the job will get done. We are immediately responsible. And that is also our own service. We cannot take it as theoretical, like a game, that I can do it or not, but it will get done. As far as we can see, if I don't do it, it won't get done. And that is our reality. We are living with that reality. That if it does, if we don't do it, it may fail. We are in that consciousness, although we understand that ultimately Krishna will not fail, but we may fail Krishna in this aspect of the movement. We may fail. Or he will make up for it in some other way, but it will be our loss and disgrace. And then another way to look at this is that the thinking or the conviction that we are needed, that we must do this jagya, it's necessary for everyone, for me to contribute, that is our loving relationship with Krishna. In the highest stage there is rasa, and in that relationship with Krishna what is fully manifest is a kind of illusory connection with Krishna, you can say, by yoga maya. That is, Krishna is a supreme controller, but those devotees who are most advanced, they go beyond understanding that Krishna is maintaining them, and they think that they have to maintain Krishna. That's especially prominent in the gopis. The gopis, and in the elder gopis, the mothers, and Mother Yasoda. She is under the yoga maya, internal potency of the Lord, so that she thinks, if I don't feed my son, Krishna, he will die. If I don't protect him, he may get into trouble. If I don't chastise him, he may grow up to be naughty because the neighbors are complaining. All this is dependent on me, my son. And if I frighten him too much, if I chastise him too much, then he'll have no other shelter. And this is the pastime of Damodar, which is going to celebrate soon. Radha Damodar. So, That is the complete conviction of Mother Yasoda. And even when she saw all the universes in Krishna's mouth, Krishna preferred and she preferred, never mind that Krishna is God, that is something I'm seeing, I don't understand it. I just want him to be my son. So that is the absolute understanding. So we are fixed in this reality as far as we can see, that we must continue to take care of Gita Nagari by our own efforts, contributing. I don't see any sudden savior, patron coming in some way to save us, other than we work for Krishna, and somehow or other Krishna manifests his mercy through the devotees. He likes to see that we are taking care of this project. So it is very wonderful that we are doing this, what we thought we didn't think we could do before. So it is very personally gratifying to me also. Now I think again Gita Nagari probably is leading the whole zone this week, and that's very nice. In this way we're going to encourage the whole zone. They're having a meeting today, Sankirtan meeting, that they also, everyone can do some service. Actually, the devotees who went out, there was 18 devotees, aside from those who are regular Sankirtan devotees, went out, and everyone had to share. So this is a very good example to the other temples and the other devotees. So I pray that we can keep it up, that we're not too worn out to again do it again. Lord Krishna is telling us that this is the test of love. There are different impetus. Prabhupada described that he learned in his early days in economics class, Marshall's Law, that the impetus for money making is I forget, what was that?
Family
affection. Yeah. So in the brahmachari, he doesn't have that impetus, but he's serving Krishna. He's not interested in the money, but in serving Krishna. So, but everyone has to perform service, even if his service is not very noble. If he's only serving his body or his tongue, his genitals, he has to do something to serve the demand. And then we serve the country, we serve the family, and we serve Krishna. That is called Sanatan Dharma. Now, in that service, there are different stages or levels of being motivated. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he analyzed that there are three. And the lowest form of motivation is fear. That can be applied in the material world. We could even in Krishna consciousness, if someone had a very neophyte understanding, someone is afraid that if I don't do it, what will happen to me? I'll be punished, or there'll be some loss. So at least that's an impetus. And he, out of some fear, fear of that he'll be, his property will be foreclosed, or he'll have to suffer some inconvenience, or his master, whoever that may be, will be angry with him, he serves. And then he says another impetus is duty. It's not just that, we read here, Prabhupada says, you either serve by force, Krishna, he will force a devotee who's at least a little sincere, he'll force him to surrender, or he'll accept voluntary service. So, when you actually have a conviction that I am a servant of Krishna, I'm a servant of my spiritual master, I have to do this. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he served Krishna with such under such difficulty, and then Lord Nrsimhadev said, "Now, my dear Prahlad, what reward do you want?" He said, "My dear Lord, please don't speak like that. It is agitating because I am a demon's son. I have an inclination by my family to want things, but if you're asking me, that's disturbing because I didn't serve you to get something. So don't offer me some reward. It is my duty to serve you. I didn't do it as business." So this is the example of duty. He doesn't want anything in return. And it's not just that if you don't do it, you'll be beaten. That is duty. And then even higher than duty is love. And love is the most imperative, or is the most, it will do the most. But it is not done just because one is supposed to do it, that it's his constitutional position, but it's spontaneous desire. So we have to try to serve out of love and duty or fear. But we have to serve. As long as we're serving Radha Damodar, the impetus will be purified. I know from serving Srila Prabhupada that fear was also there. But it was a fear because he was very powerful in that he loved Krishna and he had Krishna. And we wanted Krishna, we wanted to please him. So there was fear of his displeasure, which is actually a kind of love. Even Lord Chaitanya, in his relationship with his devotees, there was so much love in his loving relationship with Jagannanda Pandit that the Lord was afraid of Jagannanda Pandit. If Jagannanda Pandit would demand, "Now, Lord Chaitanya, I've cooked for you, you please take a lot of this prasadam," and even if Lord Chaitanya didn't want to take because he was sannyas, he was afraid that, "Oh, if I don't take this, Jagannanda Pandit is going to get very angry. He may do something extreme." So he was afraid. So that is fear in love. And love in duty is also there. So in the transcendental sense, we may serve out of fear and duty and love. But love is the topmost. Something I wanted to discuss is related is sadhana or regulated life. The weekend sankirtan is a strain on our sadhana. Our main service is in our different departments. We have our volunteers from the departments doing this extra service, but the main service is within the department, whether it's Gurukul or taking care of the cows or whatever. So in order to do our service, we have to perform our sadhana. And even if we're in this or that department, everyone's service is formed around the morning program. So this is something we've often gone over, requesting devotees to attend the morning program. I don't feel at all tired or hackneyed to bring it up again. It's a pleasure to talk about the morning program and how we have to do this. This may also be tapasya, although actually this is easy. Maybe it's appreciated more compared to having to go and collect some funds by difficult method. It's not very difficult to get up early and to go see the beautiful forms of Radha Krishna and Lalita and Vishakha. It's like this morning, their red and white dresses are so beautiful and they are so effulgent. That's our tapasya, to go and see Radha Krishna and to dance and to chant and to hear this Bhagavatam class. That's a tapasya. It's a pleasure also. But whether you take it as pleasure or tapasya, we must do this. So that goes for every member of the community. As to go on Sankirtan, we had to smash some conceptions that were there. Oh, I can't do it because of this. So we have to completely smash the different conceptions people have as to why they can't go to this program. It may involve some babysitting. It may involve some change that you don't stay up late. It may involve something, some care about your health. But you have to do it. That is our enthusiasm. I remember Gauri was giving a class talking about going to Mangalarti. And, of course, we always talk about how we should dance. But he was making the point that just to get there is a display of enthusiasm. And he was humorously describing someone who just drags himself to the Mangal Arati, and he looks terrible, and he's just standing before the deity. He said, but he's fired up because he's there. That's his enthusiasm. So that's a fact. I may not be dancing, but I must go, and I must hear. I must take part. So whatever the reason, we won't say in a blatant sense whatever the excuse, but you have to take it that it's something, it's a reason that shouldn't stand. Even if it could stand in some court, that he's saying I shouldn't go to the morning program, but wait till he hears my reason. I've got a real strong reason. I will defeat him. Yes, you may defeat me and not come, but you will not. What about the time of death? When you have not gone to see Krishna, you're not chanting Hare Krishna, you're not hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then you will also logically defeat Krishna as to why you can't go to Krishna Loka. He's saying, yes, 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 you're right. You can go somewhere else. You can, as you like. That thing you are more attached to, you can go there. You can be born again in this world. So the reasons must be defeated as to why you can't hear. I brought a few references from Prabhupada's books about this. One is a purport in the Upadeshamrita. Talking about pure goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. In the Krishna consciousness movement, we require everyone to rise early in the morning by 4 a.m. and attend Mangal Arati or morning worship. Then read Srimad Bhagavatam, perform kirtan, and so forth. Thus we hold continuous activities in devotional service 24 hours daily. This is called Satobhati, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So it's not just a job that you live here and you skip the morning program and then you go to your job. That's like a karmi. It begins by rising and attending this whole program. So, stated very clearly. I remember there was a legal case. It was a very costly legal case involving Los Angeles, and it was like taxes on the residential houses, and so we had to prove that they were part of the worship, not just residences for the houses. So the theology was being presented in court that these spaces are being used by the religion for worship because it was it's arranged that they live nearby so that they can go to these services. So the opposing side, the state, was saying, but where is there proof that you must do this? If they're just living there, but they is it actually a part of the religion, or is it just that they're actually living there, and not that they have to go? So actually, they had to find these references. It wasn't enough to say that you should go. They had to find references that you must go, and therefore the apartment could be not taxed. So it's an important part of our philosophy that the householder lives nearby in order that he can attend the morning program. Otherwise, what's the sense of living here? It doesn't make sense to live in the community and just do some work here. It's taking it in a wrong way as some kind of, not sudha-sattva, but merely sattva, some good mode of life. If you leave out Krishna and just work, then in the Krishna book, we hear the example of Krishna himself in his married life. He would rise early in the morning. Krishna would immediately get up from bed exactly on the appearance of Brahma Muhurta. An ideal householder should learn from the behavior of Lord Krishna how to rise early in the morning, however comfortably he may be lying in bed embraced by his wife. After rising from bed, Krishna would wash his mouth, hands, and feet and immediately sit down and meditate on himself. This does not mean that we should also sit and meditate on ourselves. We have to meditate upon Krishna, Radha Krishna. And that is real meditation. Krishna is Krishna himself. Therefore, he was teaching that Brahma Muhurta should be utilized for meditation on Radha Krishna. By doing so, Krishna would feel very much satisfied. Similarly, we will also feel transcendentally pleased and satisfied if we utilize the Brahma Muhurta period to meditate on Radha and Krishna. And if we think of how Sri Rukmini Devi and Krishna acted as ideal householders to teach the whole human society to rise early in the morning and immediately engage in Krishna consciousness. There is no difference between meditating on the eternal forms of Radha Krishna and chanting the Maha Mantra Hare Krishna. So this is what householder life is. Otherwise, it's a rotten situation in the well of Grihamedi. The symbol of Grihamedi is not to get up early and come to the Mangalarti. That is the pits. Krishna got up and he came to meditate on Krishna. So we have to do that also. Otherwise, what are you doing? That is so important. When it must be rising and coming to meditate on Krishna. And we are fortunate that Radha Krishna is here, and even to enthuse us more, become more ecstatic, now too, gopis are there also. So Prabhupada writes in another place, in Srimad Bhagavatam, how Maharaj Bharat did not waste any time in his life. He returned, association is very meaningful. Therefore, ISKCON tries to perfect one who enters the society. The members of this society should always remember that the society is not like a free hotel. All the members should be very careful to execute their spiritual duties so that whoever comes will automatically become a devotee and will be able to return back to God in this very life. So that's it. ISKCON is not a free hotel. That means this is our obligation. Even if you have to take it on that level, not on the spontaneous love, but it's my obligation to my spiritual master, to the community of devotees, that I go to this. That is not very wonderful motivation, but if that is what you need, then that is there also. It's your obligation. In other words, you can't really, we may be tolerant, but no one is actually allowed by the rules set by the founder Acharya to live in the temple and not do this. That's a fact. When we had our printer of ISKCON Press, he was living in the Brooklyn Temple and wasn't going program. Although Prabhupada To him, the press was his heart. He wanted those books out more than anything. He heard that, he said, then stop the press. He cannot live here if he doesn't do that. So let us attend this morning program thoroughly, and then you go and do your work in your different departments, and Krishna will give us strength to perform all kinds of tapasya. Oh, are there any questions? Yes,
can you? Can you say that to depend on Krishna, or can you mean that Krishna depends on you?
Yes, that's his mercy. That's the whole idea of the deity. When the deity comes, he's Krishna, but he becomes dependent. That you have asked me to come and worship. Now you have to feed me, you have to dress me, and don't be late, and do it nicely. I'm dependent on you. So, yes, Krishna depends on us. And Krishna is this farm. Krishna is the cows. The cows are depending. The Gurukul, the children, they're all helpless. They're Krishna's dependents. So you can think of that. They're also Krishna. And they're depending on us. The devotees, they're depending on us. So they're not... Krishna and his paraphernalia, Tadiyanam, Samarchanam, they are not different than Krishna. The paraphernalia of Krishna is even more worshipable than Krishna. So the children, the cows, the deity, they're all obviously dependent on the responsible members of the community. Even the buildings, they must, in the winter, they must be fueled, heated, and they must be kept up. The grounds must be kept up. Everything is dependent. It's not going to happen if you say, well, we're dependent on Krishna, so we don't have to do this. The devotees have to be fed. They have to be provided for. And they are Krishna's servants. So in that sense, Krishna is dependent, and he's waiting for you to take care of him. And by your doing that, he's taking care of you. He's saving you from Maya. That's the transcendental saving grace. That by doing this, then our illusion, our material propensity is completely burnt up. We have no time for it. We're so busy serving Krishna, who's dependent. Oh, I must do this for Krishna. I must do that for Krishna. I have to take care of Krishna. And I have to take care of Krishna's devotee. I have no time for my sense gratification. That is the perfection. So once we agree to serve, then Krishna gives us so much service that we're just forced to do it. Even though sometimes, then we may balk sometimes. No, I don't want to do it. But because we've surrendered to Krishna, we've given him our promise, our heart, and then we have to, all right, I have to do it. There's so much to do. Isn't that right? Sometimes you don't want to do something, but then you have to because you're surrendered. Yes. Yes. As I was saying, our relationship, the reality of it is like that. Although I can say that, well, I don't need my disciples. I can chant Hare Krishna. But on Prabhupada's order, we've taken on disciples. So they are dependent on the spiritual master. And he, as a devotee, he's dependent on them to be there, to be submissive, to be responsive, so that he can execute his duty. As a king can't exist without subjects, a spiritual master has to have disciples to preach to, to exchange with inquiry and answer. So the reality of that is sometimes the disciple is in trouble, the spiritual master has to correct him, or he's encouraging the disciple. So he's dependent on the disciples for his engagement, or else how can he be a guru? The Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati used to address his disciples that you are my masters. Prabhupada said, Krishna has sent me in the form of my disciples so many masters to serve. One serves the master. So the guru, he's serving the disciples. Please, my dear disciple, take this instruction. Take this to service. Now, please respond. Do it. Please, dependent on them. Or else he's not a guru. And in that individually, in that same way, that one is free from Maya by being forced to serve. So the spiritual master, he's also freed from his material desires by being forced to represent Krishna. So the disciples keep him in line by their dependence. In this way, Krishna has arranged a network, a loving network, to trap us all in his devotional service. We can't get out unless we become abominable, and we don't want to do that. So he's forcing us back to Godhead. Don't be independent. No one is independent, so don't try to be independent of Krishna. Yes, Maharaj.
We also, how we understand that, also we hear sometimes explained that we can act as an instrument for Krishna, like Arjuna acted as an instrument for Krishna. But if we don't, then Krishna will get somebody else.
Mm-hmm. But gee, that will be terrible for me if he gets someone else. That'll be such a great loss for me. I want to be an instrument. And if due to my own foolishness I become rejected by Krishna, then that's my great loss. There was that time that one girl put salt in the Charinamrita and Prabhupada took it. And he said, get someone responsible. So she lost that service. And you've got somebody else. So I have to be a proper instrument or I'll be put aside. That'll be my loss. So it's not a puzzle of a contradictory that I'm the instrument of Krishna, but if I don't work, he'll get someone else. So it's not Krishna's loss, but it's my loss. Because I was just explaining that. That we should see that we must do it. Not only for ourselves, but as far as we can see, Krishna needs us to do that also. All right. All glories to Prabhupada.